tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Johnson. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Don't worry, guys, there's one love. Because we're talking about Bob Marley. We're not talking about Bob Marley. We're talking about The Strain here at AfterBuzz TV. Thank you for joining me for a special episode of The Strain After Show, where we're going to be talking to Natalie Brown, who plays Kelly Goodweather on The Strain Season 2 and Season 1. I'm your host, Stephen Lemieux. You can find me on Twitter at Stephen Lemieux and tweet me questions throughout the show. I'll be sure to ask them. I'm also in the live chat. Shout out to Ghost8386 and Mr. DStyle09. Thanks for joining us live. If you are watching this or listening to this podcast, I'm just going to go ahead and give you some... just some info here that we're doing this on August 31st. So we're doing this in between the episodes of The Strain, between episode 8 and 9. So this is right after episode 8's aired. So basically the last time we see Kelly Goodweather is running away from actually attacking F and Zach. So last but not least, we have Brown Miss on the line. Natalie, thank you for joining us. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks for having me again. Thanks for having me back. Glad I'm still around to talk to you guys.
You are still around, if not, you know, with less hair, but, you know, we still love you.
It was a trade-off. You know, I've got a few extra scales. Trade a couple of hairs for, you know, some feelers.
So, last time we talked was in the middle of season one, and now that we're talking, you are full on Strigoi mode. You could be none more Strigoi.
Well... there are a few more hairs on my head to lose. And, but yeah, she's definitely gotten more Strigoi by the minute. And yet after last night's episode, now a little bit more human.
So one of the things that we kind of have to hypothesize in this show is, what does she actually want with Zach? Because there's so much, there's the dear syndrome where they have to go after the person they love most. So Kelly Goodweather is really after her son, and that would be a big hit to Ephraim Goodweather, and the master wants it to happen, but do we have more plans now that we've seen these children and what they turn into? Is this just a dig to go at Ephraim, or does she have her own plans? Is Zach going to become a intelligent Strigoi just like his mother? Does it run in the family?
So many options. I just really wanted some play dates for Zach. So he's got lots of little friends waiting for him on the other side. Well, actually, they're dwindling.
They are.
By the episode. But the books don't really deal too much with what happens once turned, but that is the goal first and foremost, is just to be with your dear ones in the afterlife. You know, and this is the new existence that Kelly knows, and why would she... She feels completely incomplete without her one and only son. And that is why she is singular in her focus. One love for Kelly.
One love for Kelly. The intro song. That's the connect, guys. I want to know how much they told you to kind of remember your character when you're in this mode. Because they take you from this ex-wife character who... is very disagreement with F. She loves Zach. You have the ex-boyfriend and all that kind of stuff who's dead now. But how much of your character that you developed through season one can you hang on to and kind of give life to through the Strigoi Kelly in season two? Do they want you to remember certain things, or do they very limit what your character can call back to?
Initially, when Kelly is given sentience at the beginning of season two, the way it was divulged to me is that Kelly, although being given some new abilities and a longer leash by the master and I-Chorus, she's very singular in her focus. She isn't as highly skilled or gifted as someone like I-Chorus, who is a vampire by choice, was turned on his own will, and then has spent several decades being a Strigoi. So initially, yes, very, very... singular and going after Zach, but now after last night's episode, she's given a very broad palette to play with. She's given access to her memories, whatever will serve her in her search for Zach. So being able to remember how to connect, like something that I thought was really interesting to play would be to remind Zach of past experiences. We don't necessarily see that dialogue play out, but just being able to verbally connect with him in the way that she used to and play on those memories. And as it goes on, the well only deepens that she can pull and draw upon.
Well, what's the most interesting thing about this character is we take her from this humanized character who has so many people that she knows and loves to a Strigoi who go after the people they love, but they really are obedient to the master. The only other character that is similar to yours is Eichhorst, but Eichhorst doesn't have anyone alive still that he loves. He doesn't have any humanized people to draw upon memories of. All he does is he's there for the master, he serves the master, and that is his only thing in life. What's interesting about your character, however, is that because you now have your memories and because you are part of this time period with people you knew from being human still alive, I wonder how much free will you actually have, because you know you went after Ephraim and you tackled him, but at the same time, couldn't you have just put your stinger in his neck and killed him right there from the ceiling?
Almost. It's not quite that long.
Okay.
The stinger wouldn't quite reach, which is why I had to leap from the second story. And like we were saying before we came on air, there are residual feelings for F, and although there was emotions there, he definitely was in the way. They were at odds with each other, so there are mixed feelings towards him. But like I said, she definitely wouldn't have minded a little taste that night had she not been foiled by Nora and the hook in her face.
I'm just sitting here wondering, will there be a time where she can fight what the master is forcing her to do?
That is a really good question.
Because the first opening monologue of this entire series is about love. And if there's one thing that can conquer the forces of evil when you're talking about things in such a broad spectrum, it's love. So giving a character sentience while still Strigoi, I wonder if the only thing that can actually overcome the will of the master is love. So it's a really interesting dynamic that they have to play with your character, which is what leads me to believe that they really won't kill you off for the remainder of the series, if not till the end. Well, yeah, fingers crossed.
I go by the books. I'm around for a little while longer. What's also interesting, too, is that the ancients reveal to us that when the master is weakened, his mind control is also weakened. And that's when they were able to gain access to where he was and what happened and how Satrakian had gotten to him. Uh-huh. So I wonder if the master is weakened again, so will the control he has over all of his worker bees and all the other vamps. In which case, there may be room for a little more leverage. But ultimately, the capacity for love as a human becomes vampiric need, as dictated by Mr. Del Toro. So I'm not sure if the capacity of love is still there, but it certainly transforms into this undying connection. And whether we all get together and play Crazy Eights, if I finally achieve my goal, is still to be seen. But no, it's interesting to see how much they'll deviate from the books and where it'll take us.
I actually haven't read the books because I'm trying to keep myself from doing it. On our panel, Jackie Borowski, you can find her on Twitter at 123Jackie_B. She read all the books, so now she's kind of limited in what she can predict. And I like to just keep all my options open. So when I'm thinking about this stuff, I'm like, okay, this is interesting because let's say Kelly kills Zach, and right as she kills Zach, they hurt the master, and then she loses control and realizes what she's just done, kind of makes her more human, and then she lashes out. I think there's so much possibility with this character, and I think it's got to be so fun to play. You basically could teach the class on acting like a Strigoi now. You're breaking up a little bit.
My days
Natalie, we're losing you for a second.
Paid off. after season one, I finally, I can still see you.
Okay, we're back. We're back now.
Good. You didn't go anywhere for me.
Oh, okay. Can you repeat what you said?
Repeat the question.
It was just about acting as a Strigoi and kind of the body movements and everything.
Yeah, Vamp Camp paid off, and at the end of season one, I finally got the hang of the vampiric affectations and how to get the twitchiness and the attack and the posture right. And then season two, they said, forget all that. Oh. You are now a highly functioning Strigoi. The twitchiness has to stop, which we saw under the excellent and expert tutelage of Eichhorst, how to control the... you know, the twitches and the worms. And so then it became a matter of being a little bit more regal and, you know, perfecting my posture and losing some of those physical affectations. And now, once I'm trying to appear more human, it's also a matter of putting a lid on a lot of my own human impulses. And one of the things our director of this episode, Kevin Dowling, had said was, remember, you don't speak quite so fluidly. And believe it or not, these are things you never want to hear as an actress, but, you know, more mechanical, less articulate. All the things you work at not being were things in my favor. So, yeah, just a little less comfortable with speech. But again, you know, Eichhorst says it'll become like second nature, like tinnitus and speakers badly aligned. So it's a matter of what vampiric affectations to leave behind and what human impulses to keep a lid on and kind of discovering it as you go and having our choreographer and set to say a little more, a little less, or just putting faith in the directors.
So how far in advance do you get the scripts? Like, how many scripts from now forward did you know at this point in time in filming?
We get them two at a time. We often shoot in blocks. I know... It was only when we came back for the first episode of season two. My favorite part of the books was the feelers. I thought it was the most disturbing and creepiest element, but I loved it. And when I found out that they were going to be a part of season two, I was pretty excited that I was going to get to work with these gifted young little performers and dancers. And Carlton Cuse said, you should see the next episode. You're going to sniff them out and snap their necks. I can't do this. How am I going to sleep at night? Or live with myself. And yet when the day came, you've got these sweet little faces saying, why can't she stay? And why did you snap her neck and not mine? But, you know, you're reminded that it's make-believe and it's a lot of fun. And I'm shocked at how much I relished in the role and working with these feelers.
Why did she snap that one's neck? Did they ever kind of...
It was a matter of once they hatched, just like in nature, you call the herd. And, you know, survival of the fittest, and, you know, one was the weakest link. So there's a clicking communication back and forth. And there was such a cacophony of clicking and all these amazing insectoid noises that were emitted from the feelers. But I click to her, and when she clicks back, something's just not quite right about her. And these are blind from birth children. And so if something got lost in the transitioning from human to Strigoi and they wouldn't serve her purposes to find Zach, then unfortunately they had to be done away with.
So in those scenes, I'm guessing all of this is practical. All the makeup and effects on the children are practical, and you?
Yes, for the most part. They do speed up the feelers in certain scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they first come into Red Hook, they're digi sped up in digital effects in post-production. I wish I was. I get to stand back and let them do the literal dirty work. They are on their hands, but they are so gifted physically. They're so flexible, so nimble, so quick on their own. They're only sped up a little bit. And then, for example, with the snapping of the neck, there are dummies with rubber necks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got to think that has to be so fun to be. You have to be so in the moment when everyone's done up like that, and you're like, I'm on my knees, and the kids are like totally on their hands and weird leapfrog position and being creepy and stuff. It's got to be a fun day on set,
or a fun night on set. Yes.
This is kind of a throwaway question, but I have to ask because we had a running joke on the after show about why they can climb on walls, and we think it's because they all had peanut butter in their lunches and their peanut butter sticks to their hands and they can climb on walls.
They went to a very special school for the blind that also had no allergies.
There you go. Okay, there you go.
Free.
So, about last night's episode, was the van with all of the Strogoi behind you going through the checkpoint, somebody in our chat wants to know, was that set up by you or the Master as a distraction?
Yes, it was. It was planned. That's why Kelly is constantly checking her rearview mirror, making sure that the plan is in place. I think it built more tension, not knowing whether or not it was going to happen, as opposed to letting the audience know that there was more at hand. But yes, that was definitely planned.
And the church scene, filming that, was it kind of, like, tell me what the best part of that day was.
I'll tell you what wasn't the best part of that day or night was that it was minus 26 Celsius. I think that's still minus something Fahrenheit. It was freezing. And some pretty icy conditions. You know, anytime I tried to get into those church doors and touching metal was pretty cold. But also having a scene that was my first scene with Nora, and I'm a big Mio Maestro fan, and we get along really well offset. So it was fun to finally have a scene with her and with Max Charles, and also Fitzwilliam and Fett and David Bradley. It was really thrilling to finally have our storylines intersect. That was my favorite part.
And then the last time we saw you with Ephraim was back when you were a human, really, where you actually had an interaction. And now, this time where you're interacting with Ephraim, you are a Strogoi. So is it kind of interesting when you're acting out a scene with a character that you've previously had to act out as Kelly Goodweather, and now you're Strogoi? Uh-oh. Did we lose you?
When the cameras aren't rolling, it's similar, and when it's very different. You were breaking...
Uh-oh. Let's give it just a second. I think we're...
Just some technical difficulties we're working on.
All right, video cut off.
We're gonna
go ahead and
give her a call back.
I think we're gonna be good.
There we go. We got it. Oh, Skype.
Oh, damn you. I can't see you, but as long as you can see me.
Yeah, I can see you.
Okay, great. You can see my sweat stash because it's so bloody hot. Everyone in Toronto is capable of being schvitzy, believe it or not.
Well, my question was pretty poorly phrased, I'll admit that. I'm trying to get a feel for the difference on set when you have to be completely different than you did previously when working with Corey Stoll. Do you kind of try to stay in character, or is it immediately when you cut, you guys are laughing about it?
It's a little bit of both. There was a lot going on. There were very involved stunts, choreography and stunt choreography with the feelers, and, you know, projecting my stunt double from the second story onto Corey's stunt double, as well as the feeler leaping off a trampoline to save the day and then being impaled by a statue. And so there's a lot of concentration, but I wouldn't say anyone is method necessarily and always staying in character. There's still a lot of laughs, but a great amount of concentration is needed to make some of these scenes go smoothly and safely.
All right, so Miondexel DL, I think in the chat is how you pronounce his name. Who knows? They want to know what's kind of the makeup process every day when you had to go on set and become a Strogoi.
It's 4.5 hours. 4 hours, 45 minutes, start to finish. It takes half an hour to glue down this lid of mine because it's pretty curly Southern Italian hair, and only to put a bald cap on immediately after, and then 3 hours and change of putting on the prosthetics and smoothing out any seams with transfers, they call them, and then layers and layers and layers of really thin, strong-smelling paint. So I can send you a photo if you want. It's really attractive with nose guards, and the need for so many layers of paint is to look like layers of flesh that are slowly rotting, eroding away. And then that comes on the thinning wig, and then finally the red contacts and the teeth, and that is just under 5 hours.
And that's for one day of filming. Did they try to consolidate that as much as possible? But how many days did you have to go through that?
Dermatologically speaking, I think all of the Strogoi max out at 3 days a week. Our skin just says enough. So that's the most that's the most I've worked. It's such a vast cast, so much ground to cover. that I generally work. I mean, it depends, but you know, a few days a week during the shooting of an episode. And then now that we get to see Kelly looking more human, I absolutely adore the prosthetic special effects hair and makeup team. Love every minute that I spend in that trailer. I'm not claustrophobic. I don't mind people touching me. We talk the whole time. But it was like a day at the spa for Kelly to be back in the regular hair and makeup.
Wait, so you mean to tell me they don't put you in the 5 hours of makeup and then cover it up with your normal makeup and hair?
No, that was generally a little paler than usual and a wig. Because, I mean, essentially in the story, Kelly is wearing a wig, so we thought it was easier for continuity for me to wear one as well. And nothing like a little lipstick and a costume change to make a lady happy.
All right. And then have you guys been on set at the same time as Corey Stoll? The Justin Cinema wants to know, what's kind of been the interaction with you and the other cast members outside of your scenes? Or is it just like you hadn't seen them in a long time before last night's episode filming?
You mean when I watched it back? Or, I mean, when we're shooting, the get-along gang, as I like to call them, the happy gang of vampire hunters, everyone in the show gets along famously. And I was thrilled because I didn't get to work with much of the cast last season, but everyone truly adores each other and would get together for dinners and for fun nights together. And they're always great to include me because I'm, you know, one of the locals and everyone's from faraway places, so they don't have their family and friends here like I do. But yeah, we spend time together on and off set, and it's just great to really finally be able to dig into a scene with all the other characters.
All right. So I don't want any spoilers. I know you can't give me any spoilers, and I know you don't want to break your NDA and owe them $1,000 or more, probably several thousand dollars to give spoilers. Can you give me any teases or anything about what's coming up in this season?
I think so. I mean, I don't think it's a fireable offense, but I will remind you that we did see at the beginning of last night's episode, in Intruders, Kelly does get past the guards into Red Hook, and she fled out the door after her plan was foiled and didn't quite get to Zach and F in the way that she had hoped. But she's still in the hood. And this is my little hint. If you can see this.
Oh, no.
Can you see it?
It's Red Hook beer.
Yes. And I just want to say,
is it cider or beer?
I won't say what's in it, but can I just say that Red Hook is delicious?
Kelly's going to go on an eating spree. Oh my God, Red Hook's on the menu.
Thirsty. Well, because hurt anyone this season.
They've already fought back to capture Red Hook, so how are they going to fight from both sides? Then it's going to be.
Oh, I mean, the next episode is called "The Battle for Red Hook," so it's on.
Well, I hope a lot of people battle for that beer, right? No, I'm just kidding. So what about outside of the strain? I'm not talking to Kelly Goodweather anymore. I'm talking to Natalie Brown. What's going on? Tell me about your projects that you have coming up. I mean, everyone kind of looks at IMDb and sees a few things, and when you see two X's as one title and How to Plan an Orgy in a Small Town as another title, I kind of worry about your career.
No, not at all. The XX is an all-female horror anthology, which is a really exciting project. It's all female horror writers and directors, Mary Herron, as well as Jennifer Lynch and Jovanka Vukovic, who wrote The Box, which is the segment and the installment that I was a part of. And Guillermo del Toro had executive produced her award-winning short film, The Captured Bird. And she's a fan of the show, so she approached me to be a part of it. And it's like a psychological horror, but it was exciting to be a part of something that empowers the female within the horror genre. So I'm thrilled to be a part of that. That's due out, I think, next year once all four pieces of the anthology are completed. And How to Plan an Orgy in a Small Town, brought to you by Jeremy Lalonde. This is his follow-up feature. He's done sex comedies in the past. One is Sex After Kids, and this is the follow-up. And it features the funniest comedic actors in all of this country. And I have a really hysterical cameo. So that's about to do the festival circuit. Just came out. And I also got to do an episode of Dark Matter, where I was reunited with Mr. Fitzwilliam.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's the show he's on, where six people wake up on a spaceship in space with their memories completely wiped. And that is on, I believe, Sci-Fi in the States.
Yeah, it airs right after Killjoys aired, and we just wrapped the Killjoys after show here at AfterBuzz TV.
Oh, very cool.
Yes.
Yeah, that's another great show that's shot here. So there's lots of really exciting things that are filming in Toronto right now and that I'm excited to be a part of. And those are the ones that are Dark Matter already aired. And they premiered the show at Comic-Con when we were there. So it was really great to be reunited on the carpet and see some familiar faces. And that was a lot of fun. A lot of fun being at Comic-Con.
Did they kill you off in that show, or can you potentially come back?
Let's just say I'm still in a very deep sleep.
All right. Well,
they haven't jettisoned me out into space just yet.
Well, it's always a plus. It's also kind of like a metaphor for people in Game of Thrones where they get jettisoned out into space, you know, by being murdered.
Do they come back, though?
I guess we'll find out at the beginning of season 6 for Game of Thrones, right?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I keep wanting to call you Kelly. Natalie, thank you again. Again, where can your fans find you on Twitter? Follow along with social media.
I am Miss N Brown backwards. So Brown and Miss, both on Instagram and Twitter. And there's lots of fun pics that we're posting now that episodes have aired. So, yeah, stay tuned into Twitter.
All right. And I want to shout out Mr. D Sile in the chat. Says, tell Natalie she is she's awesome as Kelly Goodweather. Well, you're awesome as Kelly Goodweather.
Thank you. I want to say cheers, and I really hope you enjoy next week's episode as much as I'm enjoying this cool beverage on this really hot night.
Is that mug actually made for Red Hook, or is that, that's not part of the show? Red Hook's actually like a thing, right?
Well, Red Hook, the area, the neighborhood in Brooklyn exists, but this is, I think, a beverage that's out of Seattle. But I just loved the metaphor.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for calling in, Natalie, and hopefully we'll talk to you again after the finale and maybe season 3.
That would be awesome. Well, season 3 is definitely happening, so I'm looking forward to all that's in store.
All right. Thank you, and have a great day.
You too. Good night.
All right, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to the interview with Natalie. She's awesome, and it's awesome to talk to her about her character. Again, there's so much in this show that you can't really ask about because the books are out, so you don't really want to get an answer, and you don't want to get a spoiler or potentially any kind of spoiler. So if you want to break down last night's episode, tune in tonight at 9 p.m., where the After Show team will be breaking down everything about last night's episode, which was a good one. There's some trouble in bed with Eichhurst, and there's some trouble in bed with Gus. Not really in bed, but you know what I mean. And we'll be breaking down all the Quinlan stuff. So tune in then, and thank you for joining us for this special episode. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at Stephen Lemieux, STPHENLEMIEUX, and we will see you guys later tonight for the Strain After Show.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.